This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Welcome to another episode of Echoes of Dissent, a weekly podcast that explores the events, the movements, the beliefs and the personalities. In short, the why a song of protest, a song of dissent was written and sung, and who created it. We look at its impact at the time and its relevance to today, if any.
It's an important and popular fact that things are not always what they seem. For instance, on the planet Earth, man had always assumed that he was the most intelligent species occupying the planet, instead of the third most intelligent. The second most intelligent creatures were, of course, dolphins, who, curiously enough, had long known of the impending destruction of the planet Earth. They had made many attempts to alert mankind to the danger, but most of their communications were misinterpreted as amusing attempts to punch footballs or whistle for tidbits.
My name is Frank Carter, and today on Echoes of Dissent, we take a light-hearted view of charismatic leadership. An oxymoron or a detraction? Light-hearted, because sometimes that's the only way to deal with serious stuff. And our introduction, of course, is the beginning of one of the funniest books I have ever read, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And the dolphins knew what was going to happen to Earth, being the second most intelligent creatures on Earth, man being the third, as it mentioned earlier. And they just gave up trying to communicate to us. We just didn't listen, because we rarely do. And that is kind of like the theme that we're looking at today through the charismatic leadership kind of stuff. Charismatic leadership, is that an oxymoron or a distraction? And during our program, we travel the galaxy with a charismatic president. We track the disillusion when the promise of change turns into the same old, from and we hear this from The Who. We won't be fooled again. A 1971 anthem following the 60s, late 60s, early 70s, disillusionment.
The sun.
In 3 months' time, we're having a general election. There will be many well-meaning people will be asking us to give them a job for 3 years. Genuine, committed people who really want to do the best for us, and they really want to serve. Some of them will be skilled, some will be looking for something to do. There will be a few inflated egos. There will be some who know all the answers and some who don't, but will gather a team to figure them out. There will be excellent communicators, and there will be those with head down, bum up, as leaders of a try-to-scoring scrum. There will be non-entities. So today, our track, as we consider the options, knowing, of course, that this is We Won't Be Fooled Again. Released in 1971, written by Peter Townsend, as a reaction to the broken utopian promises of the 1960s. There were a cultural revolution all over the world. There was change, there was freedoms, there was new expression, there was designs, there was music. We've discussed this in previous programs, and no doubt we will go back to it again, revisit the 60s again. The 1960s counterculture horrified the parents, of course, but it was a failed revolution. The assassinations, there was the sense at the end of the 60s, early 70s, there was a sense that the great generational shift had simply been absorbed and neutralized by the very system it sought to overthrow. The song is at its core about betrayal, the betrayal of idealism by power. The way every revolution, no matter how righteous, seems to end with new faces sitting in the same old chairs. Townsend originally conceived it as a critique of both the left and right. He wasn't political either way. Pox on all your houses. But the line that has haunted the decades is the one we all remember. Meet the new boss. Same as the old boss. In actual fact, those of us who are familiar with Animal Farm, written around about 1948, know exactly what he was talking about. It's a cynical line that became an anthem of disillusionment. But let's be honest, we keep falling for it, don't we?
We don't get fooled again.
So before we get to our own election in November, perhaps we need to laugh at ourselves a little, because sometimes the best way to spot a con is to laugh at the cartoon version first. And let's have a ray of sunshine, the ray of hope that we take with us to, well, that we hope we take with us to the ballot box.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun, it's all right. Little darling, it's been a long, cold, lonely winter.
And there, of course, is the hope. But let's start with the most gloriously useless politician in all of fiction. I give you Zaphod Beeblebrox, president of the Imperial Galactic Government. For those who don't know him, Zaphod has two heads, three arms, and one enormous ego. He's charismatic, he's reckless, and he is so cool you could keep a side of meat on him for a month. He was elected president of the galaxy because he was perfect for the job. And here's the punchline. The job of galactic president involves no power whatsoever. As Douglas Adams explained in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the president is a figurehead. His job is not to wield power, but to attract attention away from it. The qualities required are not leadership, but finely judged outrage. Zaphod is ideal because he's an infuriating but fascinating character who distracts the public while others actually run things. He steals a spaceship during his own inauguration. He sections off part of his own brain so he can't remember his own plans. Okay. He spends most of his time partying, bragging, and avoiding responsibility. And yet, people like him. He gets elected anyway. And while he is filling the headlines, amusing most, disgusting some, the real power is planning a new superhighway. And the dolphins have been trying to warn us for years, but we don't listen because we're too busy reading the headlines. So what happened? What were they warning us about later when we find out who is running the place? But now you might think this is just science fiction, absurdity. But Douglas Adams was satirizing something very real. The tendency of voters, they think that's you and me, including me, to choose performance over substance, distraction over governance. And of course, it's not just Zaphod. Satire has been warning us about charismatic incompetence for decades. Take the classic British comedy, Yes Minister, and of course the follow-on, Yes Prime Minister. Jim Hacker, the Minister for Administrative Affairs, who became Prime Minister. He's a well-meaning but bumbling politician who is constantly outmaneuvered by his permanent secretary, Sir Humphrey Appleby, a man who has mastered the art of using jargon and bureaucratic inertia to ensure nothing ever really changes. Hacker is a public face. Sir Humphrey is the real power. The comedy lies in watching Hacker believe he's in charge, while the civil service quietly runs the country around him. It's funny, but it's also a perfect metaphor for what happens when a charismatic leader is all show and no substance. The attention is on the performer. The real decisions are made out elsewhere and often go unchallenged until it's too late. Now, you might say, yes, action is exaggerated. Real leaders aren't that bad. And you'd be right, up to a point. But here's where the satire meets the reality check. And let's listen to some promises and what happened to them. Now, I am not going to be referring to New Zealand, and I'll explain why in a few moments. But let's go through a couple. So, to be honest, most of them are in America, and I am not going to be discussing Donald Trump. We've had enough. Had enough. Quite simply, had enough. But back to 1968. Richard Nixon, going for election. I have a secret plan to end the Vietnam War. This was repeated on his campaign trail. The Vietnam War had been going for about 4 or 5 years and had been getting a little bit of strife. There'd been some protests about it, beginning people getting a bit uneasy about soldiers being, you know, American soldiers being killed and what we were doing over in Vietnam anyway. So he used this phrase repeatedly. Problem is, the secret turned out to be escalating the bombing into Cambodia. He actually meant that he was going to expand the war for another 4 years, resulting in more casualties than under the previous government. The plan wasn't peace. The plan was prolongation, dressed up in mystery. This is the ultimate magic trick of charismatic leadership, promising an invisible solution to a visible catastrophe. Nixon's secret plan was the political equivalent of child, or any of us perhaps, hiding a broken vase behind our back and insisting that we have a secret way to fix it. The secret wasn't peace. It was that he never had a plan at all. Just a flair for communication, dramatic pauses in the theatre of power. Next, moving on, 20 years, George W. Bush, read my lips, no new taxes. Have we heard that recently? Have we heard that before? I think it's not an uncommon thing to hear before an election. Delivered, but this delivered with such aggression, finger-waving finality, that it became the emotional climax of his convention speech. 2 years into his presidency, of course, facing a rising deficit, he signed a budget that increased taxes. So there's the high watermark of performative certainty. Bush wagged his finger at the American people as if his sheer machismo could balance a budget, as if he alone could do it. When the reality bit, he broke his vow faster than you can say economic reality. Moving on, another 20 years, Boris Johnson, we will build 40 new hospitals by 2030. That's within about 11 years. His government, Boris Johnson, a wonderful cinematic pledge. The reality, by 2025, this is 6 years after he did it, and he was no longer there, of course, only a handful have actually broken ground. And most of the new hospitals were just refurbishments of existing buildings using repainted signage. So this is the political equivalent of promising a mansion, then handing someone a tin of paint and calling the garden shed an extension. The absurdity isn't the lie, it's the maths. 40 hospitals in 10 years sounds heroic. But you've got to ask the question, hang on a minute, how many are we normally building now? The health service apparently builds one a decade, and he was going to be looking at 40 in a decade. Charismatic leadership thrives on architectural daydreams, because a leader on a podium building castles in the air is far more photogenic than a bureaucrat laying bricks on the ground. Yeah, I've got a quote from him. I'm not going to move on to Donald Trump. I'm going to move past Donald Trump. Let's have another few seconds of Here Comes the Sun, because, look, it's terrific. Terrific music, and perhaps I'm being unfair to the Beatles, using it as a bit of a rosy promise. So we noticed a pattern in those three examples. The more specific the physical promise, the taxes, the hospitals that read my lips, the more abstract the eventual excuse. Charismatic leadership is not about delivery. It's about keeping the illusion going and then usually blaming everyone else. We measure these leaders not by what they built, but by how long they can keep us staring at an empty plot of land before we notice the foundation was just painted cardboard. Then, of course, we look for another one. And that's the paradox, if you like, because we feel the disillusionment. And then we naturally go to the next person who can say, I can fix all this. So, charismatic leadership, an oxymoron, a contradiction in terms, a distraction? Absolutely. Because to be charismatic is to be believed in, in spite of reality. To be a distraction is to fill the headlines while the real power is working away unnoticed. Until too late. To be a leader is to be held accountable to reality. To be a leader is to take people with you. When the job is done, the leader congratulates everyone for their achievement. And we say, we did it ourselves. So we are left with the choice. In 3 months, do we want a magician who dazzles us with promises or an administrator who bores us with receipts? We so often seem to choose the magician and then we act shocked when the rabbit never appears. So let's come closer to home, because here in New Zealand, we're seeing something similar unfolding. And here is a caveat from this program. The following hopes to avoid political bias. I hope to avoid political bias. No inference should be taken about which policy or party I would vote for or definitely not vote for. I hope that after this program, you will have no clue as to my particular views. So we'll just move on from there. In our own election in November, several political parties are recruiting high-profile candidates who bring name recognition rather than political or business experience. The ACT Party has announced broadcaster Paul Henry as a candidate. Henry once stood for National in 1999. He said he supports ACT because someone needs to hold National to the oven. I'm not quite sure what he's talking about there, but when asked about policy details, including his proposal for a multi-billion dollar cancer hospital funded by wealthy New Zealanders, he admitted, I'm a big picture man. Joking, he would hire 50 people to iron out the details. Look, lovely guy. Lots of people really like him. Others don't. But, you know, I've got no problems with the guy. New Zealand First has recruited former All Black captain Tane Randall and former broadcaster MP Michael Laws. The National Party has brought in former Federated Farmers President Katie Milne and dairy farmer Christine Assuncion. Now, these are respectable people, no doubt likeable, well-meaning, sincere, and no doubt have numerous skills. But why are parties recruiting them? One reason is simple. Name recognition. In an era of voter malaise, where everyone's dissatisfied with the status quo and, you know, let's go somewhere else, we've got to find someone who's going to clean this up, where major party leaders like Chris Hipkins and Christopher Luxon are struggling to connect, parties hope that familiar faces will cut through. Celebrity candidates can generate media coverage that policies alone cannot. They can tap into nostalgia. So the question we need to ask is not, is this person famous? It is, can this person govern? And that brings us to delicate question. What happens when a party has good policies but a leader who is not a great communicator? There is an art getting the message across ethically without resorting to personality-driven campaigns. And of course, as soon as parties start using mass advertising campaigns, they're jumped on all over because, you know, they're spending too much money trying to persuade us. And where's their real policy? So there are a few well-worn principles. They're not earth-shattering. They're basically, it's a simple checklist stuff when we're looking at somebody who we think, is this kind of person going to be governing us for 3 months, for the next 3 years? First, prospective government needs to have a visible plan. Have they got a real plan? Name the problem, set a timeline. It's just like a job. Identify milestones and let people track the progress. It's like any self-employed or small business, only magnified, of course. You have a plan, you get a job, you figure out how to fix it, then you put in the milestones and contingencies. Okay. When the inevitable setbacks come, there's a narrative that anchors everyone. Second, you don't break a promise ever. We know that, but that happens lots. Difficulty is, of course, we've got short memories. Third, know your three messages. What are the three key things that they're saying? We can only remember three things. They need to be convincing, concise and consistent. I listened to a party the other day who suggested how people should vote. They lost me completely. I mean, I know what they were talking about, but it was lost. I was lost. Fourth, if the leader struggles with communication, are they building a strong team? Who else is on the team? And fifth, consult before you announce. Don't use town halls to announce decisions. Get everyone else on board first, please. These principles don't require charisma. They require discipline, honesty, and respect for the electorate. They don't make for a great campaign poster, but they are the qualities that build a country that works. So as we go to the polls in November, let's not ask, who excites me? Let's ask, who's ready to govern? Let's ask, what is the realistic plan? What are the milestones? How are they going to let us know? And what are they going to do if it doesn't happen properly? And let's remember that the best leaders don't promise to save us. They equip us to save ourselves. Back to our satire. Zaphod Beeblebrox is funny because he's absurd. Two heads, no plan, no power. But the tragedy is that real leaders sometimes get elected on similar terms. Charismatic, distraction, empty promises. The comedy reminds us what to look out for. Oh, and the dolphins. They left. And what happened to the earth? It was destroyed to make way for an intergalactic highway. And the dolphins knew it was going to happen. They were trying to tell us, but we didn't listen. And which is the most intelligent creature? Well, actually, it's the mice. Because they were the ones that created the earth as a giant computer to find out the ultimate question. And they've been running around mazes for the last 150 years, training us humans to try to find the answer. I think we should have listened to the dolphins. Thanks very much for listening. This has been Echoes, Frank Carter with Echoes of Dissent. Charismatic leadership, an oxymoron or a distraction? Next week, we're going to look at data centers. They've been in the news lately, and there's a lot of protesting about data centers. We briefly looked at them a couple of months ago, along with a couple of other environmental issues. I'm not sure that there's any protest songs specifically about data centers yet, but they certainly seem to be causing a bit of an issue. So thanks very much for listening. Back with you next week. And this is available. This program, of course, is available on your favorite social media platform and freefm.org.nz or accessmedia.nz. Bye.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.